Welcome to the Collector's Show, where you'll learn insider secrets about collecting everything. Best places to buy, how to judge authenticity, and what are the collectibles of the next generation. Here's your host, Harold Nickel.
Well, hello there. Greetings. Welcome to the Collector's Show for another week with me, your host, Harold Nickel. Finally, we're going to talk about Nancy Drew. We're going to talk about Nancy Drew and how to collect such a well-known, famous character, role model, that is almost 80 years old. The first Nancy Drew book was published in 1930, and I think, and I don't know why, but her, 80. Well, 80 is what I read anyway. 80 years, I'm not really a math guy. But we're going to talk to Jennifer Fisher about Nancy Drew in the interview segment coming up next. First, of course, news from the world of collecting. There's a really good new book out. It's called Living with the Arts and Crafts Style. I really think that knowledge is power and that you are going to learn most anything worth knowing from a book. This book is very comprehensive and catalogs what it refers to as the arts and crafts movement, something that started in the late 19th century and still a very popular style of design today. And it's also an ever-growing collectible area. The Queen of Collector's Guides, Judith Miller, takes everybody through the history of the arts and crafts movement philosophy and has just about 1,000 photos. I recommend it highly as a collector and somebody who just likes to read. Now, a less fun story. As a result of an airplane crash, Flight 3407, there's a civil suit that contends that one of the passengers who was killed on the flight, his sports memorabilia collection was destroyed in the fire following the February 2009 crash. The gentleman in question, Doug Walensky, he was unhappily killed when the plane crashed into his Clarence Center home. An expert on sports memorabilia testified that his collection, which was in about 45 boxes, was worth between $2.5 and $3 million. They say that this is what the commercial value would be. His insurance company and the defense, not surprisingly, says a good bit lower, $1 to $1.5 million. But a sad story about the loss of a collection, and a good word for all of us that, you know, if you haven't done so and you have a collection of things that is valuable, make these kinds of arrangements for them before it's too late, and you'll save your family the time and the trouble and, let's face it, considerable expense of taking something like that to a court. Now, something not quite so serious. A man known as the Bedpan Whisperer. I'm not making this up. Eric Eakin is known as the Bedpan Whisperer, and he's collected 250 bedpans and various types of bedpan-related memorabilia. He has bedpan greeting cards, bedpan poems, bedpan jewelry, bedpan salt and pepper shakers. He has vintage antique bedpans, each one clean enough to eat out of it, but I really don't recommend that. He can tell you the difference between a bedpan and a chamber pot, and all kinds of other items in his collection of bedpan-related stuff. I'm going to try to find him to get him on, but collecting bedpans is, I guess it's a little over the top. I found that article in Collectors Weekly. And thank you to reporter Hunter Oatman Stanford for penning this for him. And I'll try to find Eric Eakin and see if he'll come on the show and talk about his bedpan collection. Now, one of the things he has is the electric bun warmer. And yikes. Anyway, coming up, it's our segment on Nancy Drew, the long-promised Nancy Drew collecting, coming up next, right here on The Collector Show. I don't read ad copy for the Life 360 app because I believe in it so completely that I can just talk to you about it based on my own experience and opinions derived from my own experience. It's the best way to stay connected with the people who matter to you the most that I've ever seen. It's a family locator app that you put on your cell phone, whether it's an iPhone or an Android. You can get it from the iTunes store. You can get it from Google Plus. You can create a private circle for your family. You can create another circle for your friends. You can locate, message, and check in instantly with the Life 360 app. It's quite remarkable. There was a story on our news here earlier this week that the police used their technology to locate a cell phone through GPS. If you had Life 360 on your phone, you would not need the police. You'd be able to find it without any kind of intervention. That can be something as innocent as we're supposed to meet at the movies and see where somebody is or isn't, but it could also be something much more serious that would require you to know where your loved ones are. Don't wait until you need it to get it. The Life 360 app, Google Plus, iTunes Store, get it, download it today. You'll be happy that you did. Well, it's the interview segment of The Collector's Show. You know, we've talked before on the program about collecting books, antique books. We've talked about collecting manuscripts. You'll remember a few weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago, we talked about occult manuscripts. But we've never talked about collecting anything specific in the book space or the manuscript space. But that's going to change this week because we are going to be talking about Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew was the fictional girl detective investigator from the early part of the 20th century. Her first books were published, I think, in around 1930. There have been hundreds of books published in the Nancy Drew series since then. And of course, there's TV shows and movies and all kinds of other merchandising tie-ins. And we're fortunate to be joined this week by Jennifer Fisher, who is a collector of Nancy Drew. And Jennifer, welcome to The Collector's Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's just kind of dive right in here. For folks who may not know, who is Nancy Drew?
Well, for those who didn't read Nancy Drew, and there were millions who read her over the years, she was a teenage detective, an all-American girl who hit the scene in 1930, and she loved to solve mysteries. She lived in the fictional town of River Heights and apparently was very crime-ridden because there were always all sorts of mysteries for her to solve and crooks to chase. Her father was an attorney, and so sometimes she would help him with cases or he would help her with her cases. And she was just, you know, this bold, spunky, independent girl, especially for 1930. It was a breath of fresh air for a lot of kids that started with them back then.
Yeah, that she lived in a crime-ridden town. It reminds me of Cabot Cove, Maine, where that Angela Lansbury character lived. I thought, man, you know, that's a tough neighborhood to live
in. For such a quaint town of Cabot Cove, there were so many murders and mysteries to be solved. And River Heights was pretty similar. In fact, the first woman who wrote the Nancy Drew books later in life said she sort of envisioned Jessica Fletcher and Murder, She Wrote as like an aged Nancy Drew.
Yeah, I was thinking that Nancy grew up to be Jessica Fletcher. But anyway,
yeah.
How did you come to be interested in Nancy Drew?
Well, I read them as a kid. I loved mysteries, and so they fit right in there with that genre. And so I started reading them when I was around 7 or 8, and so I read them as a kid. And then I always kept my childhood books because I just always loved that series. And so then later in life, you know, I sort of picked up the collecting bug by collecting all of these vintage editions that I wasn't aware of and sort of snowballed from there, and that's where my interest in collecting came in.
Yeah, it's not uncommon that people, as they become adults, start to collect things that they liked and enjoyed when they were growing up. But it's kind of hard for me to, you know, wrap my head around Nancy Drew, because I think, and I think I said this earlier, there were like 500 books.
Yes.
Where do you even start to decide what you're going to collect?
That is a very good question. For me, and some collectors like me, we are like what we would call anything Nancy Drew. So
mm-hmm.
we collect everything. Some people like to just stick with what they remember as a kid, because so many, you know, kids or parents would just get rid of their books and, you know, they'd move out of the house and stuff would get donated or tossed or sold. And so they have to go back and, you know, try to collect everything. For me, I just started, with what I was familiar with as a kid, in part, because I never had a full set of books, because sometimes I would check them out in my school library.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a haphazard collection of books. So I started with that, but I also sort of jumped into the editions from the 30s that I had found at an antique store, because they were really fascinating to me. I'd never seen them before. So I grew up reading them in the very late 1970s and in the 80s. And so my editions were completely different.
Yeah, I had read that the author, the man who had written the very first Nancy Drew book, passed away right as it was published, and that I think his daughters took up writing the Nancy Drew series. And I wondered that, or if as a collector you could discern who wrote which book, and if, because they were all under the same pen name, but if you
yes.
could tell from reading them, okay, who wrote which book, you could tell by the style or the vocabulary. Is there anything like that that is in the collectible space?
Yes, there is archival research out there. It's, most of it's housed at the New York Public Library, where they have the Stratemeyer Syndicate archives now. So I'll take you back to early 1900s. There was a man named Edward Stratemeyer. And he was a writer, and he formed a company called Stratemeyer Syndicate, which was basically like what you would call a book packager of today.
Mm-hmm.
He had lots of story ideas and all of this creativity, but he didn't have time to write everything, so he would hire ghostwriters
mm-hmm.
who would write for the company under various pen names, like Nancy Drew's pen name, Carolyn Keene.
Mm-hmm.
So he began with Nancy Drew creating the outlines for the first 4 Nancy Drew books. And the first ghostwriter of the series was a woman named Mildred Wirt Benson, and she wrote 23 of the first 30.
Wow.
There was another ghostwriter that stepped in briefly that wrote 3 books. His name was Walter Carrig. And then there was about 4 or 5 other ghostwriters sort of that wrote 1 book each at a certain point in time. And then Stratemeyer's daughter, Harriet Adams, began writing the books. And so between Harriet and Mildred, they wrote most of the books in what collectors tend to call the classic series, which
mm-hmm.
were the books out between 1930 and 1979, and there were 56 of those. Now, a publisher switch happened, and then they went on into paperback beginning with 57 onward, starting in 1979. So we still had classic books in paperback, but the books that most people read and have passed down over generations are those classics, the first 56. So there were 8 ghostwriters for that particular set of books. And there are releases and signed records and letters and everything documenting all of this in the library in New York. And There's also a guide out there to collecting Nancy Drew books by a man named David Farah.
Oh, wow.
And in that guide, he also lists who wrote what. And then at my website, I have a section on the history of the series where you can read about all of that as well.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to want to ask you about your website, but I guess you said that there were 50 books written between 1930 and 1979, or?
Yeah, 56 books.
Okay, so that means that between 1980 and now, there were close to 400?
Yes.
Who wrote those?
We don't know every ghostwriter, because at one point they switched in 1979 to, they had been being published by Grosset and Dunlap, now a division of Penguin Putnam,
mm-hmm.
but they went to Simon & Schuster, who still currently produces the series and print and publishes it. And basically, they had book packagers in-house, and they would push about 6 books at first per year. It's not as many now, but then there were spinoff series that were created, quite a few different spinoff series. So mm-hmm. that's where you get all this massive volume of other books being written since then.
Okay. So I guess what I was thinking is that just the sheer number of books published over, 30 years, 30, 34, almost 35 years, it seems like the potential value of Nancy Drew books would either go down, or it would be those first books written by the first couple of authors that were really the most collectible. Is that a fair conclusion?
I think that is, as far as the classics go. And, you know, they went through different formats over the years. The ones that are probably going to be the most collectible overall are the ones that came out with the dust jacket.
Okay.
At some point in the early 60s, they had these picture cover formats where there was no dust jacket and the image was on the cover of the book. Some of those are very collectible as well. When you get to Simon & Schuster's period of Nancy Drew, you have lots of paperbacks. And some of the earlier paperbacks from the early to mid-80s are considered fairly collectible because they're probably the most like the classic series than the later books that would come out. So some of those early paperbacks are fairly collectible. But after that, you know, it's hit and miss, and certainly they don't hold the values that the classic books do.
And you mentioned the dust jackets. Let's shift gears into those, because I think what I saw when I was getting ready to talk with you was that there were some very distinct types of dust jackets and some that actually contained clues to whatever mystery Nancy was working on. Can you tell us about those?
Dust jackets that have clues to the mystery she was
working on? Yeah, I think they were called puzzle editions.
Puzzle editions. Now you have me puzzled.
Mm.
Well, the dust jackets for the classic series came out in 1930, and they ran through the early 60s. And the dust jackets never really had clues to what the mystery was about.
Okay. I'm fully capable of having misread it, misunderstood,
okay.
jumbled this interview with another one. Who knows? But
okay.
No big deal. I just thought I had seen that somewhere, but perhaps I am mistaken, and likely that
okay.
I'm mistaken. So
I don't remember anything like that. So
okay, well, there's this whole though cult of personality that grew up around the character of Nancy Drew. What was it about her that made her so interesting?
Well, I think there's several different things. For one thing, she was very bold and adventurous and very independent. She didn't have a mom in the series. Her mom died when she was young. Mm-hmm. So she had a doting father and a motherly housekeeper, but yet had a lot of freedom to travel and go out and solve these mysteries. She had a snappy roadster in the beginning. Later it was called convertible. This terminology changed, but mm-hmm. the freedom to go out and solve all these mysteries. And she was very kind and helpful to others and a good role model in that aspect. And the books were very sort of safe and sane. So they were very good for kids in that aspect. They weren't overly, you know, they didn't go into lots of social issues or deal with things like that. They were just pure entertainment. And what was great about them was they would hook kids to reading. So kids might start with Nancy Drew and then move on to other things. But they were a great way to get kids reading.
I had thought, based on what I know about the origin stories and comic books, that she'd have made a perfect superhero for a comic book because, you know, she has a traumatic event. She loses her mother. She's got resources, money, time, a great car. I'm thinking this is girl Batman.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised that they never did like a comic book spinoff, but they never did anything like that. The closest we have to comic book Nancy would be the modern graphic novels that a company called Paper Cuts has produced.
Ouch.
Beginning in the 2000s. So Nancy Drew sort of got redone manga style, and then so those editions have been out, and they kind of went along with the current series at that time that was being published by Simon & Schuster. It followed the same sort of timeline, but that's the closest she's come to being in a comic book, but nothing iconic like a Batman or a Superman story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they'd had to give her a mask and a cape, bare minimum. But still, I think her origin story very closely resembles those from the comic books. You had said that you collected everything Nancy Drew.
Yes.
That's got to be some collection. Tell us about your personal collection and some of the more highly prized items that you have.
Well, I've been collecting, you know, I have my childhood books. And mm-hmm. so then about the late 1990s, I started really collecting. So for nearly 20 years now, I've been collecting, and it spans from 1930 to what's coming out presently. I still buy all of the new books that are being published. So it spans all of those years, all of the different series, spinoffs, foreign editions. She's been printed in over 26 languages or more. Like, it keeps changing, but lots of different countries have their own Nancy Drew version, some more in the past than present day. Not every country is still producing foreign editions, but there's library editions, book club editions, I mean, you name it. So there's also all sorts of types of books. And then I also collect collectible items, and there have been some of those over the years produced, like board games. When they had a TV show in the 1970s, there was merchandise that tied into that. There's merchandise items in the form of advertising material from 1930s when they had some movies with Warner Brothers. And so there's all sorts of different kinds of collectibles. Some of those that I prize the most might be some of my original art, mm-hmm. the illustrators for some of the books in the classic series.
Wow.
I have a few paintings. I love my Nancy Drew board game. It came out in the 1950s. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about board games on the show last week. And funny that there's a Nancy Drew board game. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Oh no, it's a fun game. And it came out in two different versions. And then there's even one that came out in Norway. So there's a Norwegian version that I collected a few years ago. So there's always something new that I find. Even though I think I may have most things that are out there, I'll often find something else.
I'm old enough to remember that television show. There was Nancy Drew, and there was also a Hardy Boys television show. And I think they came on one before the other, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah, it was on Sunday nights, and I think they would alternate. And so, and then at one point they kind of combined themselves, and they would be in the same episode.
Yeah, there's always kind of that Flintstones meet the Jetsons thing that TV people then and now can't resist. And so I totally get that they tried to put the two together, but I'm really impressed, I guess, is the only word I can think of, that after, you know, all of these decades and all of these books that the writers are still able to come up with something that continues to keep people interested. And I'm going to guess the audience for Nancy is mostly female. Is that a fair conclusion?
I would say it mostly female. It's probably right. Like, within our fan group that we have, we're mostly female in the group. But there are males that did read the Nancy Drew series. Sometimes they read their sisters. Sometimes they just preferred Nancy Drew to, say, the Hardy Boys.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably a smaller group than the female reader group.
And you mentioned your group that you get together with. I'm guessing that there are fan clubs and conventions and all kinds of stuff. Tell us about those, if you've attended any, and what goes on.
Well, I've attended all of them because I plan them. And
get out of here!
Yeah. So back in the early 2000s, it was actually the year 2000, there had been some people that for several years had, you know, communicated through little journals or little newsletters that were mail order type newsletters. And then when the internet kind of became something people were getting on back in the 90s, there were a couple of message boards online that collectors would, you know, meet at and trade books and sell books to each other. And then, you know, eBay was starting up about that time. So mid to late 90s, we were on a message board, and several of us decided to start this email discussion group that was coming out through what is now a group that's used at Yahoo. It used to be eGroups. But anyhow, we started this discussion group called Nancy Drew Sleuths, and that's sort of how we got started. Then we grew into an organization where we have official members, and we have annual conventions every year, and lots of other fun stuff. And so every year since 2001, we've had a Nancy Drew convention around the country.
Man.
And, yeah, so what we'd like to do is sort of follow in Nancy Drew's footsteps. So we've taken classic books, since those are pretty much most people's favorite and ones that most people remember the most. And some of them were set in real-life places around the country. So we will go to one of those places and have that theme book that was set there and sort of bring it alive for fans so they can walk in Nancy's footsteps. So we'll go to places Nancy did in the books. Sometimes there's a mystery or some sort of fun activity that people will do. We have a convention day where we have speakers and activities and book dealers and things like that. And so we've been doing that, and next year will be our 15th year doing something like that.
Where will it be in 2015?
Well, next year is an interesting year. It's a year of anniversaries. For one, there's Nancy Drew's 85th anniversary next year and 110th anniversary of the Stratemeyer Syndicate that created her, and also the 110th anniversary of the original ghostwriter of the Nancy Drew series. So, and it's our 15th anniversary as our group. So we decided we would put together three sort of historic mini conventions taking place in three different cities, 1 month apart, and they'll focus on the anniversaries. And they won't be these big convention days. They're just short little events where we're going to be doing a lot of historical touring related to the people that created Nancy Drew. And the first one that we're doing is in Iowa next April, and that's going to be partly related to the woman who wrote the books and Nancy Drew's anniversary. Plus, it's our quote-unquote River Heights Convention. There's so many areas around in Iowa where we're going to be that look like the River Heights of the original Nancy Drew books. So then we're going to be in Toledo, Ohio, the next month in May, and that's where the first ghostwriter, Mildred Ward Benson, lived for many years and wrote quite a few of the Nancy Drew books there. And then we're going to be in the Maplewood, New Jersey area in June for our Stratemeyer Syndicate theme. And so there's lots of sites around Maplewood where we're going to tour and learn a little bit about the syndicate and how they created Nancy Drew and other series. And so these events will all also revolve around library events that we're holding with a couple of speakers. And then we're going to be donating a whole set of Nancy Drew books, the classics, to the local libraries for all the kids to read.
It sounds like so much fun, and you had mentioned earlier your website. Will you have details about the the individual conventions listed there?
Yes. Pretty soon we will have all the details for next year. We're kind of working on finalizing all the details, but probably by the middle of this month, well, we're almost at the middle, aren't we? Probably within another week or so, we should have everything up to the website. So if anybody wants to go check it out and learn a little bit about what we're doing, it'll be there.
And tell everybody listening what your website address is.
Okay, for the convention, that's our fan group website, which is www.nd, as in Nancy Drew, nsleuths.com. And then my website is nancydrewsleuths.com. And so you can find the details linked from there to our fan site or just go directly to our fan site.
So the first one is ND Sleuths, S-L-E-U-T-H-S, more than one sleuth, right?
Yes.
And then the other one is, instead of ND, just Nancy Drew.
Nancy Drew Sleuth. Nancy and just Drew Sleuth. No S on the end of Sleuth.
All right. Well, I have to say that you have introduced me and our listeners to yet another all-new area of collecting with the Nancy Drew series, and I really, really appreciate your making time to talk to us on the Collector Show.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I hope that they're intrigued. I hope that if they are fans of Nancy Drew, maybe they'll take a look at what we do and sort of get interested again in that sort of nostalgia from childhood and maybe join us at one of our conventions, or just visit us online. We have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have Pinterest. So we're active in social media, too, for those who are interested in that and just want to get online and talk about the books with other collectors.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes collecting fun is getting in touch with people who have a similar interest. And I have no doubt that you'll have plenty of visitors who have heard the program today and visit one or both of your websites.
Well, that would be great. Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for being here. But for the rest of you, hang on. One more quick word before we go here on the Collector's Show on Web Talk Radio. Well, I want to thank our guest, Jennifer Fisher, for talking to us about Nancy Drew, and be sure to check out her websites for events coming up all over the U.S. that will commemorate and honor Nancy Drew. I guess the takeaway for me this week with respect to Nancy Drew, I didn't really know quite what to expect, but what I got from our conversation was that the protagonist in the story, Nancy Drew, set such a good example and had qualities about her that her readers valued and wanted to emulate. She's brave. She's independent. She's overcome personal tragedy. And she has the qualities of perseverance. She's likable. All of those things are qualities that anybody, male or female, should desire to have. And I'm happy that there are still characters in popular culture that survive as long as Nancy Drew has and that continue to provide all of us with a good example. Next week on the Collector Show, with any luck at all, we'll talk about collecting bedpans. Wish me luck and come back to find out what we do here on the Collector's Show on Web Talk Radio with me, Harold Nickel. Thank you for listening.